The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. We talk so much about Bill Curry Ford, but what's most important for you to know is that they really are family owned on premises, and they care to do everything they possibly can to give you the best experience possible buying a vehicle, servicing a vehicle, body work, whatever it might be. General manager Sean Sullivan is a friend of Ira Kaufman, a friend of JoeBucksFan.com, and he wants you to reach out personally directly to him. He's the boss, to help with whatever you need. And that's very, very rare. His email is at BillCurryFord.com. He's at the dealership. You can get online help. BillCurryFord.com is where you want to start shopping immediately at all times. Remember, their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. Tremendous truck selection. Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford.
Hey, BillCurry.com.
Bill Curry Ford.
BillCurryCom.Ford. All right, tell me when.
Go ahead.
BillCurryFord.com. Get your keister there right now.
This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast starring, you know what, Ira? I'm going to skip the normal introduction today, Ira. I'm just not doing it because I have an important announcement. But first, how are you, Ira?
Oh, I thought that's the routine you were going to skip is how are you, Ira? I was getting a little nervous. I am excited, and I think I don't want to speak for Bruce Arians because I'm younger than him, and it's nice to be younger than somebody, gentlemen. It's nice. I think I'm younger than him. But anyway, I think that Bruce Arians, now the word's not anxious. It's eager. Anxious means you're worried. Eager means you can't wait. So I'm eager, too, about what this team is going to do. The dynamics, gentlemen, with Brady, you can't get around number 12. It always comes back to him. And there's so many dynamics around this football team. The storylines are unbelievable, and that's why, of course, NFL Network can't get enough of your Tampa Bay Bucks. And Lee, I just can't wait till they open this package. I think it's going to be fascinating.
The players agree with you. What I mean by that is, you know, I was on Jeff Cameron's show, our friend up at ESPN Tallahassee, and generally speaking, he asked, well, what's kind of the vibe of practice? I said, enthusiasm. I said, these guys are like a bunch of college kids playing football on a Sunday afternoon out on the quad somewhere. I said, you know, Cam Brate makes a nice catch. Mike Evans comes running in from the end zone to grab him. That's it. Way to go. And in the background, you see Tom Brady jumping up in the air with both fists. I said, Chris Godwin makes a heck of a catch in the end zone for a touchdown. And Brady, 43-year-old, Mr. Six Rings, jogs down the field to jump on him and hug him and pat him on the helmet. I said, defense makes a good stop on Rojo, and they act like they just won a game. They're like hooting and hollering and yelling. And I said, the enthusiasm, I don't know if they're getting it from the fans or getting it from themselves or what, but usually training camp is drudgery, and these guys are like, they're done with practice. They're about ready to die. They can't wait for it to be over. Let's get back in the locker room. Let's hit the showers. These guys, every play that's halfway decent, they're celebrating.
And, you know, Lee, along those lines, Steve, and I don't mean this as a knock on Jameis Winston, who did a ton of good things in 2019. When he wasn't thrown to the other team, he was doing a lot of good things, and the Bucs scored a lot of points last year. And let's not forget that. He wasn't responsible for terrible defense for 10 weeks. So my point is, can you imagine if the Bucs this year would have come back with Winston, no Brady, and if there's no Brady, there's no Gronkowski, no chance. You know, what the heck were they going to market in the offseason? What would training camp be like? Would they really be this enthusiastic? Boy, what a difference. And again, anybody you're going to compare to Tom Brady is going to be short shrifted. So I don't mean it as a knock to Winston. I guess what I do mean is Brady stands apart. There's nobody like him, and there never has been. And everybody wants to see, can this guy do it at this age and lift this team around him while he's doing it? Steve, it is one heck of a story unfolding in Tampa.
Ira, of course, I've got a different angle to this, which it might upset some people, but I'm going to save that for a minute and reveal my big announcement here, because we have already talked about how on opening day, when the Buccaneers head to play the Saints, there are no fans going to be there live, and you will be at Big Storm Brewery, the Clearwater right. Tap Room, watching with fans. And everyone's welcome to watch the game there, but I just found out that the plan is they are on track to have their gigantic 3,000-plus square foot all-outdoor covered area open and ready for the watch party, which means fans can grab a table outside, totally modern, you know, an AstroTurf kind of setup on the ground, their A-plus menu, TVs, surround sound, the whole thing, and it's all outdoors and fully covered. The big covered ceiling goes up about 30 feet, it looks like. It's probably more like 18 feet, but it's an amazing spectacle. And so this party, Ira, which was going to be sort of a tame, socially distanced kind of indoor thing, is all of a sudden a little more relaxed, a little more fun outdoors, and it's going to be great.
That's outstanding. And Steve, I think we should mention that if people want to sit inside, they can be accommodated.
Absolutely. But
they're calling this, Steve, when I was there a week or two ago, we were talking about it, and they're calling it perhaps the premier beer garden in the Bay Area. And if anybody knows about beer gardens, it's Mr. DeKemper. So Lee, that's the aim of Big Storm in this venture. And I wouldn't put it past Big Storm the way they're doing it. They may garner this reputation. And when DeKemper hears the word beer garden, he's already in his vehicle, Steve. He's halfway there.
No, Uber.
Oh yeah, Uber. That's right, Uber.
Sage, of course, Big Storm is Florida's best craft beer. The website is bigstormbrewery.com, but this is going to be legendary setup. I wouldn't even call it a beer garden. It's just a modern, top-shelf, fun place to be. And, of course, the food and the menu is fantastic. We're excited to hang out with you, Ira. We got giveaways. We got a PA system. We got Zach, the Man Beast intern, going to be handling all the giveaways. And it's just going to be a great time outdoors. Or indoors, of course, if you want to be. But the outdoors is going to be phenomenal, and that's where the Sage will be.
And it's a late afternoon game, Steve. So when we get towards the second half, things will cool down a little bit outside. I think it should be comfortable.
And they've got the cooling fans. Big Storm does it right. Anybody who's been to the tap rooms knows that. Very excited to be out there. And, of course, hopefully I didn't jinx everything, but they are supposed to be open September 10th, and we'll give any updates as we go. And I'm talking about the outdoor area. Of course, the Big Storm Tap Room is open in Clearwater and in Odessa. Sage, we had some interesting takes from the Bucs. First, I will go to LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy, great speaker, and I gave him, because he likes to talk, I gave him a very open-ended question because I knew he would just go on a on a three-minute State of the Union address, and he did. I just asked him, you know, you've been here a while now. What do you think of the makeup of this team? You've been around a lot of teams. And he went on quite a rant, Ira. And perhaps the most stunning thing in there, we'll start with that. LeSean McCoy said the things that impresses him the most.
I know exactly what you're going to say, Steve.
Is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line.
Lee, are we surprised that McCoy is showing some love to the boys up front that are responsible primarily for opening run holes for LeSean McCoy and leading them downfield on those screen passes, which I believe, Lee, will be resurrected in the Buck playbook because we ain't seen him for about 5 years, inexplicably. And I think McCoy could be a big part of that. Steve, while you were asking your question, did you happen to mention to McCoy that the Sage says you're holding the ball out like a loaf of marble rye? Did you tell him that, Steven?
I didn't tell him that, but Ira, I actually have a screenshot. I'm going to email you. I was looking at some of the Bucs highlights on their website, and where you can really see some of the holes open. And I screenshotted him holding the ball like a loaf of bread that he was looking to hand off to a person on the sidewalk as he ran by.
It's really scary, Lee. It's really scary. I don't know if he could change. I mean, 12,000 yards into his career, and a heck of a career it's been. He's got quite a body of work. And Lee, he's got to be excited because he had spot duty in Kansas City, but he was the big time ball carrier for the Buffalo Bills. And Lee, you know enough to realize that the Bills haven't been known as a potent offense maybe in a decade. No. I mean, even last year they made the playoffs because they had a really good defense, and they do have a really good defense. And the quarterback's improving, but they don't have a lot of weapons, and McCoy's eyes are bugging out when he looks around and, you know, sees all the talent at the receiving, and he's got Brady behind him. He's got to be a happy guy, and I don't mind him singling out the offensive line. While he does that, Lee, we want to remind our listeners, seeing is believing. I want to see more out of this offensive line.
At least today, you know, and there's been a couple other times, but at least today, the left side of the offensive line had blown a couple really good holes open. You know, I've always been of the belief if you can't run the ball unless there's like a 5-wide or 5-yard wide hole to run through, then you're not an NFL running back. You know, sometimes an NFL running back must make his own hole somehow, some way, must find a way himself. You know, it's not just the offensive line. It's a running back as well. Sometimes it's more the running back. Sometimes it's more the offensive line, but it can't be just one or the other. I'll tell you what, one guy who hasn't been jumping out at me, I was thinking the exact same thing before I heard Leftwich talk. Not really flashing, yay or nay. He's not getting beat bad, but he's not blowing holes open either. It's Tristan Wirfs. And I think it was Leftwich that said, if you're not mentioning his name, he's doing a decent job. Isn't that the old saying about offensive linemen? If you're not talking about him, they're doing a good job?
Absolutely. And
I can't remember one play where Wirfs looked like he was coming off a MAC team, much less Iowa. I saw two guys go up against him, and he kept them off Brady.
Yeah, I think the applicable word, Steve, for Wirfs at this point is decent. Decent. He's not blowing anybody's mind at right tackle. Saying this is a huge upgrade from DeMar Dotson in terms of pass blocking and run blocking. But he's been okay. Steve, one more thing about McCoy. When we show up for the opener, when the Bucs are in the Superdome and we're at a big storm surrounded by Buck fans, I am going to be very curious because when McCoy does get the ball in space and he puts that ball out and extends his right hand, I believe, Stephen, that 63 Buck fans in that beer garden will hold their breath while McCoy does that. It jumps out at you, Steve. You said you got a screenshot. It really jumps out at you when people talk about tucking the ball in and ball security. And that's my worry about McCoy. And I think, Lee, I think you'll back me up on this. I think that's a big reason Andy Reid lost a little bit of faith in him last year in KC.
Ironically, Ira, in that screenshot was from a play where Tristan Wirfs gets absolutely abused. So I could send you that video as well. And that's really the fun of training camp is that, unfortunately, we don't get to see all of it. We don't get to see the film. So we're picking and choosing. You know, I believe Wirfs is having a good camp. I'm hearing some rumblings, Ira, that he's having a phenomenal camp and that they're just sort of, you know, taking it slow. But, you know, there's no reason to think that this guy drafted 13 overall can't play right tackle. I mean, that would be such a miss, and it looks like he's right on track.
I think so. Now, Steve, you got to stop talking to Wirfs' father, who says that his son's having a spectacular camp. But I think he's been fine, Lee, at this point. I think it's fair to say we would kind of be shocked if he's not starting week one, Lee, shocked.
The thing about Wirfs, like I said, I really haven't noticed him at all, yay or nay, which, again, I think that's good in a way. The one time I did notice him, I don't know if Alex Kappa blocked his man into Wirfs, but there was a pass play where Wirfs was taking on two guys. They pushed Wirfs back, but he made sure they didn't touch Brady. You know, two guys, two on one, they didn't touch either one. They didn't touch Brady.
You know, Steve, speaking of rookies and their potential impact on the 2020 Bucks, the guy that's fallen through the cracks, and he's fallen very fast, Steve, very fast. And I think digging a hole that I think is going to be very tough to crawl out of for this rookie season is Tyler Johnson. Steve, he's got to get on the field. You know, these other guys that are vying for that third and fourth and fifth spot are playing well. They're having good camps. Arians like some of these guys and hasn't really seen Tyler Johnson. He's running out of time, Steve.
Ira, he's got to make the team. That's what he's got to worry about because with the all-in mindset at $1. They're not going to sit around and cry for Tyler Johnson if they need a guy who can tackle on special teams. But you know what? Maybe he's the kind of guy that they talk to him and they tell him, look, you got a slow start here. We want to put you on the practice squad, which means we have to cut you, but we'll pay you the maximum salary, which is quite a bit of money, and stash him there. I could see that happening. Ira, when you hit the pool and you're hanging with Cosmo and your beautiful wife and you go back in the house and you see some water that doesn't look like what splashed off your feet, some strange water and something smells, what do you do?
FloridasEliteRestoration.com. That's your best move. Don't waste any time. I take a little closer look and it's water and it's mold. And when I see that, I don't hesitate. I call Florida's Elite Restoration. They're going to come out. They're going to give you an honest assessment of what's going on.
That's the key, Ira. The first sign of water, even if you're coming home from work, you see a puddle of water under the kitchen sink, doesn't belong there. You don't know what happened. It smells. Maybe it's been there 4 hours or 3 days. Call Florida's Elite Restoration. Get to their website, floridaseliterestoration.com. They'll come out free, get their thermal imaging cameras out there, figure out what's going on, and they will guide you through the insurance process if it's even necessary. Mold remediation specialists, it's important to call them first. Doesn't cost anything.
Absolutely. Florida's Elite Restoration.
I got to run this past you, Ira, because we want your wisdom. It's all about your wisdom on this podcast. LeSean McCoy also said, which was very interesting, said that, you know, when you see all these studs on the outside and passing game and the tight ends, and, you know, he's raving about everybody, but he said when you see that passing game, he's like, as a running back, you just take a deep breath and you know that the defense isn't trying to stop the run. They're not planning, game planning to stop the run. So you can get those little extra yards and it's much easier. And it got me thinking, well, what the hell last year, the last couple of years, the Bucs have been throwing the ball all over the yard like lunatics. They even threw the ball 2 years ago for 5,300-something yards, more than when Jameis did last year with the combination of quarterbacks. So it really kind of illustrated the struggles of the run game, whereas this guy comes in and says, hey, these wide receivers are so good, it's easy to run the ball, but it hasn't been. Yet he did say, Ira, that Ronald Jones is one of the most talented backs he's ever been around, and reminds him of him when in his second and third year, and that Rojo still has some stuff to learn, but he's very excited about him.
Steve, I had the same exact reaction about what Jones was saying about a team teaming with good targets, and that should really open up the running game. What the hell's been the problem the last few years? Lee, Jameis was throwing the ball all over the joint, and they were scoring a lot of points and a lot of yards. And Lee, let's be brutally honest, as we always are on this most popular Buck podcast on the planet. We put ourselves in the shoes of opposing defensive coordinators planning for the Tampa Bay Bucks. Lee, are they really going to focus on stopping the Buck running game? That's got to be an afterthought.
No.
And I don't want to hear all this nonsense. Oh, the first thing you got to do is stop the running game and make a team one-dimensional. Lee, the Bucks have already been one-dimensional through their own ineptitude in this regard. Now, things could change this year. Let's hope they do. But until they do, Lee, they got no track record of it. And it's even more damning if what McCoy said has some validity, and I think it does, Lee, in terms of the focus of every defense that plays the Bucs is stopping Evans and now Godwin, and certainly this year with Gronkowski, and they're worried about Brady, and nobody's having sleepless nights about Ronald Jones. That's just the way it is, Lee.
You made a point there, Ira. I don't think you're going to like my response. I hope the Bucs are one-dimensional. Why would you run the ball when you have these weapons? I mean, seriously, why would you? You'd be an ignoramus. It's like, well, you know, we got all these Pro Bowl wide receivers and tight ends and first-round draft picks. Nah, we'll let Ronald Jones run the ball. For example, look how that worked with the Giants, against the Giants. Jameis was lighting those guys up, and they took the ball out of Jameis' hands. They lost. Why would you want to be balanced when this offense is that damn good in the passing game? That's like going up to Don Coryell back in the 70s. I know Steve doesn't like these references of people that are dead, but why that'd be like going up to Don Coryell. Like, Don, no. Just go pick some mediocre running back and give him the ball. Heck with Kellen Winslow. Heck with Charlie Joyner. Heck with John Jefferson. The heck with them. Run the ball with some two-bit running back.
I understand your point, but, Steve, a couple of notes of caution. If Lee's thinking about Brady throwing the ball 50 times an afternoon, more prone to injury. That's just natural, Steve. 50 throws rather than 33, more prone to injury. True. And also, if you're in second and 10 or third and 10, that really accelerates the other team's pass rush rather than being in third and 3. So and gives you less options than if you're in third and 3. So, Lee, I understand your point. The strength of this offense clearly is through the air. Nobody would argue with that. Why is Brady here? That's the reason. But at the same time, Steve, I don't want to see 73% passing and 27% rushing. I got trouble thinking about that as a winning formula, Steve. I just do.
We've talked about this before. And look, it's as simple as if you're going to run the ball, which obviously you will at some point, run it well. And if you do run it well, you don't need to pass as much. It's also a little tougher on your wide receivers when you're asking them to, you know, run 60 sprints a game instead of 34. It's a little bit different on those guys. But if you're going to run it well. And the point we were making, and I think Shady was making, is that not a lot of excuses not to run the ball well over the last couple of years. So hopefully we're beyond that in a new era of Buccaneers football when it comes to at least being decent at the run game.
If you take what Shady said literally, and I really can't because you know how players are. They're not going to be remotely objective. Isn't that rather damning about Dirk Cutter? I mean, Cutter gave up on Ronald Jones.
Yeah, it's damning. It's damning on the Bucs. There's no question about it.
Because, I mean, if it takes 2 years to reprogram Ronald Jones, you know, that was a project of McNair, the running backs coach last year. And you know, I'm a results guy. I didn't see a whole lot with Rojo. You know, when people got to use referees as an excuse for him not being a top shelf running back, I mean, please give me a break.
Hey, Stevie, by the way, I'm glad that Lee's out of practice and he's reporting that Cam Braid is making a few plays out there because you know, I'm the guy that went out on a limb a little bit and said Braid's going to be one of the big beneficiaries of number 12 under center and they're going to develop this trust and Braid doesn't drop any balls. And of course, I started getting a little worried. Here comes Gronkowski and everybody's raving about O.J. Howard. And I'm thinking to myself, where the heck's Braid fit into this picture?
He's getting a lot of targets.
I'm sticking to my guns here, Stevie. Ira, Braid's going to have a nice season.
Ira, you might want to turn in those guns to like one of these gun buyback deals that they have sometimes. All right, Lee, as promised, we're going to go let Ira fix his hair and do his business and prepare a sandwich. And we're just going to talk about 5 minutes on Friday because you were the representative for us at the stadium. And, of course, it was an intra-squad scrimmage. I got some questions that I think the good folks of Tampa would want to know. Are you ready?
Sure.
It's a scrimmage. So did they have the scoreboards going? Were they playing a certain amount of quarters? Or how did they do it as far as the logistics and how much football you think they actually got in there?
They may have gotten a half in. The stadium operations tried to mimic a game day. And I'll give you a perfect example. And Arians talked about it Sunday in his press conference after the last final opening. And he was joking around that he goes, I don't know who reported it, but we didn't have a penalty on the opening kickoff. Well, they don't have referees. They didn't have referees at this scrimmage. So you really didn't know if there was a penalty or not unless there was a whistle blown. So they had the kickoff. And then the scoreboard, you know, has the yellow flag, his flag. Okay, wow, that's interesting. So I wrote in my notes, flag. I guess Arians read our story about how there was a flag in the very first play of practice in scrimmage on the kickoff. He's like, well, we didn't have a – but he was joking about it. We didn't have a penalty on the kickoff because he was the referee. He was literally the referee for the scrimmage, Arians was.
So what you're saying is on the scoreboard, penalty signage came up, the big yellow flag, and it all seemed like a penalty, but it really wasn't, according to Arians, a day later.
Yes, exactly.
I got it.
So, you know, and so, yeah, they really tried to mimic it. They didn't have a PA announcer, but everything else was, you know, very much like game day. You know, they had the replays, which was great. Well, they didn't have cheerleaders, but it was very much a very mimic game day, except without the PA announcer. Roughly three series, yeah, both first and second team. Yeah, three series. Some guys played on both first and second team. Scotty Miller springs to mind. Justin Watson. They both played both second and first teams.
Gotcha. And did you get any kind of vibe from some of these fringe guys? I'll say maybe some of the depth in the secondary, and I'm not going to go through all these bubble players. Nobody cares that much, but some of the depth guys in the secondary. And of course, I know the backup running backs didn't necessarily look very good. What did you think?
No, the running backs didn't impress me. I mean, Vaughn had one nice run. Ronald Jones, of course, is a starter. He had a really nice catch and run, but I want to see more of what he does, not just once in a blue moon. Dakota Dixon looks like he's going to be a keeper. He may even get some starting reps. Everything he did in the scrimmage, everything he's done in practice today at practice, we're recording this on Sunday evening. Earlier today, he had a pick on Brady. Dixon's going to be a guy that makes it, I'm pretty sure. So he kind of stuck out as far as bubble guys. This Khalil Davis, every time I watch him, he makes a play. He made a couple plays in the scrimmage. I believe he got a virtual sack. They're not allowed to touch the quarterback, so it's a virtual sack. JPP had two virtual sacks, so he's ready to go, and he had a sack on Sunday's practice, so he's ready to rock and roll. That guy is.
Khalil Davis, a sixth-round pick out of Nebraska. The coaches have raved about his explosiveness as a legitimate pass rusher, and he was called the most explosive guy in camp on the defensive line by Casey Rogers, but that's great to hear.
I think he's set. So those guys are the ones that jump out as far as bubble guys, Dakota Dixon and Khalil Davis.
And on these virtual sacks, we all get what that is. I wanted to ask you, in the scrimmage and in Sunday's practice, because Brady's so well known for this, did you see any quote-unquote virtual throwaways, meaning Brady's known for getting rid of the ball, living to play another day? Do you see any of that in practice where he just flat out throws the ball away, throws it into somebody's feet, that kind of thing?
I didn't see feet, but I think he did that with Gronkowski. He had Gronkowski open along the left sideline, and he was getting pressure, and he overthrew Gronkowski. And those guys, how many years have they been playing together? So, I don't think communication is an issue with those guys. So it sure looked like to me that it was overthrow on purpose. He was throwing it away. So in that respect, yeah, I did see that Sunday.
And with the Bucs offense, so did it shock you after what you saw on Friday for them to come back on Sunday fresh, ready, fired up, Tom Brady? And Bruce Arians said, they totally laid an egg, 11 guys who just weren't with it. Did that shock you? And I'm not going to ask you if that scares you. We'll talk about that with Ira in this week's podcasts. But did it surprise you just based off what you saw?
Slightly surprised me, but more than anything, it encouraged me. And I'm not saying I was encouraged by the offense looking sloppy. I was encouraged that the defense has been playing later. Every practice I've been at, the offense has dominated the defense. Today, the defense was dominating. I didn't see that before. So maybe the defense is getting caught up with the offense. Maybe they're getting a step ahead of there. But I think, Steve, you and I both worried about the secondary. And to see today that defense, if I remember correctly, I counted up 7 pass breakups and 2 picks. So I've never seen the defense play that well this summer against Brady. Usually it was Brady carving up the defense. So that was very encouraging to see that Arians kind of mocked the offense. Like you said, 11 guys stunk, I think was his quote. I look at it the other way. I think the defense was playing so much better. And the longer the practice went, the more engaged, the more excited, the more enthusiastic the defense was. Toward the end of practice, it was like they were dominating. They were feeling it. They were very vocal. JPP was, pumping them up, getting support. Devin White was doing a lot of yelling. Secondary was dancing. So that was fun to see that the defense actually showed up for a change.
Yeah, the Dixon thing is interesting. Last year, he was a guy Arian said was, they really planned on making the roster and contributing, but then he got hurt. And that was that. So it looks like he's all the way back. And they've got a ton of competition there. It's better than being thin with no competition is worse than thin with competition. And, we'll see what Winfield has to offer on opening day when it all gets real. I know you wrote about Jordan Whitehead having a pick on Sunday. So, big day for those guys. Mm-hmm. Going back to the scrimmage, anything else as far as glitches, penalties, sloppiness, special teams that really stood out to you as something they need to work on, or did it all look pretty smooth?
As far as the practice or the scrimmage?
The scrimmage.
Well, the one that really, really jumps out at me was the kicking. I mean, Elliot Fry, the AAF legend, the former star of the Orlando Spurriers, he stunk. He stunk in that scrimmage. And this sticks out more for me than anything. So it was the first touchdown the Bucks had, and Fry attempts the extra point, and he clangs it off the left upright in the north end zone. So he couldn't use the south end zone as an excuse. It was the north end zone. So the next time his team scores a touchdown, Arians goes for two. It's like he was already fed up with the kicking. He's like, I've had it. I can't handle this anymore. You know, we're just going to go for two. I just thought that was so, in a scrimmage. You can almost understand it in a game, even a preseason game, but this is a scrimmage. And he's going for two. He's so fed up with the kickers. It's 2 days old now, and I'm still laughing about it.
Well, you got to wonder if it was pre-planned, but it may not have been. It may have been just a real situation where, you know what, you just screwed up and from a short range, and now we're going to go for two because you suck, and that's a real game as well.
We're going to miss Arians. Between stunts like that and the throwing the flag the second time so you can have extra time to chew out the referees and his quotes, we're going to miss this guy. We got him maybe for one more year. I'm already missing the guy, and he's still here.
You just never know how well things go, and we're going to stay positive. Maybe he'll hang around for quite a while, but it would be great to see him walk off with the Super Bowl next year or even this year. But, you know, hey, we can dream. All right, let's get back to Ira. Lee, we had you playing Aaron Andrews as sideline guy, being very reporter-like. So we'll leave on that visual. All right, Sage, listen, one thing that Leftwich said that was interesting, Byron Leftwich talking to the media, said that the offense really is a work in progress. And even though he was clear that Brady has 100% of the playbook down, but they could use more reps. And he said that the offense is designed around the quarterback. That's how this offense is designed. It's all about what the quarterback feels good about, but, you know, made it clear that we don't really know what this offense is going to be yet.
I'm a little nervous. You give me agita over here. Lee, correct me if I'm wrong. Tom Brady has been a Buccaneer for more than 5 months. And they're still not sure what this offense is going to be. What's going on? What's going on here, DeKemper? What the heck's going on here? I don't believe what Leftwich is saying. I love the fact that it's going to be designed around number 12 because, you know why? Because it reinforces what the three of us have been saying since mid-March. Yeah, of course you're going to design this offense around Tom Brady, and Bruce Arians is not going to keep the same exact offense he had for Carson Palmer and Jameis Winston. That'd be foolhardy. Quick way to get yourself fired in this league. That's not going to happen. But, you know, Lee, the concept that this offense is still evolving, I'm not buying that, Lee.
Leftwich is sort of painting himself in the corner by saying that. If it's still evolving, if you still don't know what it's going to be, where have you been the last few months? Or are you admitting that you have very little influence in the offense?
I look at it this way.
I can't take them literally, Steve. I can't.
I understand. And Leftwich, you know, typically says a lot and doesn't say much all at the same time. and that's fine. Many, many coaches are like that. But I forget which coach said it, but I thought it sort of speaks to a lot. It might have been Leftwich. Brady is requesting, you know, he'll flat out request, give me a few more throws to this guy in practice. I want to get a better feel for him. Want to see what I like. And, you know, Brady's sort of picking and choosing certain routes and things to work on to get a feel for who does what as well as they can or as well as he wants them to. So maybe from that perspective, like maybe they have an idea, but maybe they haven't exactly, honed it to all the guys who are going to fill certain roles.
All right, that makes sense. That part makes sense, Steve. Brady maybe still isn't sure which receivers excel at certain type of routes. Lee, I can understand that. But the basic concepts of the offense have been implemented. If not, this team's in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, I totally agree with you, Ira. That's, I don't understand what Leftwich was trying to say. But then again, like Steve said, he says a lot and didn't really say anything. We were talking about this last podcast, Ira, about the offense. And, it could be exceptional again this year. if Brady throws for 5,000 yards, let's say if he throws for 4,700, I will find it difficult to imagine Byron Leftwich will not get an interview. Somebody's going to interview him. Because if you think about it, in two back-to-back years, they would have, you know, a lights-out up passing offense, two different quarterbacks. One, some believe, is a heretic of quarterbacks that ever lived. And the other is a 43-year-old man 7 years away from AARP membership. So if Jameis is as rotten as what some people say, and, you know, we know the history of 43-year-old quarterbacks in the NFL, it's terrible, and he throws for a boatload of yards, that's got to tell me Leftwich is doing something right, or he's learning how to do something right from the Tom Moores, Christensen's, Arians.
Interesting point, Lee. You know, I go back to, you know, we used to talk about the Bucs going up and down the field, but that was irrelevant because they didn't cash in with touchdowns. Steve, last year, I believe they were a top five scoring offense. And the more, you know, when you factor in all the giveaways, that is kind of remarkable because they lost 41 possessions. Guys, a giveaway is a possession. You lose 41 possessions and you're still averaging 29 points a game. And some people say, well, Arians is in charge of the offense. Well, Leftwich is still a big part of it. And, you know, he's the guy that was talking to Winston all the time, him and Christensen. And you can't just dismiss Byron Leftwich in terms of the, you know, the offense's success. That's not fair. And
no, it's so easy to do, Ira. It's easy to do. But I think Bruce Arians is pretty heavy-handed, just like he is in personnel. You know, I think it's a similar kind of relationship. Leftwich, I would have to think he actually will get a job next year. I don't even think it's a question of an interview. I think he'll get one if this team is good. I'll say now, I don't think anybody's going to be insane enough to hire Todd Bowles. So I think Leftwich would be the guy. Wanted to run this past you, Ira, which ties to what Lee was talking about with the enthusiasm earlier. Two things. One, I think some of the enthusiasm, and I've been just listening to all these training camp reports across the SiriusXM NFL radio. They're going out to all the camps. I think a lot of the enthusiasm in general is just tied to, hey, a bunch of guys who get to be on the field. They finally get to take off their masks. They've been holed up for months. And across the league, there's all this enthusiasm from players just because they get to do what they love to do and they're not cooped up as much. So I think that might be a little bit part of it. Guys are appreciating camp instead of going back to their quarantined hotel. That might be a little bit of it. That's the negative side. On the positive side, I asked Jaden Mickens, Ira, your favorite player, guy trying to make the team as a returner, but he was actually the top returner for Jacksonville back in 2017 when they were good. And I asked him if he sees any similarities between the two camps. You know, they went to within a couple of plays of the Super Bowl, and he said
They had Brady beaten that game.
They did. And I asked him if he felt any similar vibe, you know, from having played for a top team. And he said, actually, he does. That he said those Jaguars were so good and the competition was so good. The players, the backups, even if they weren't competing, they were so talented that there was just so much enthusiasm in practice because everybody was good and you wanted to one-up the next guy and you felt the team was good. So he said there's a lot of parallels.
If I remember that Jacksonville team correctly, and I believe I do, gentlemen, they were loaded on defense. They were loaded. Calais Campbell, who the three of us pined for in that offseason. But, you know, we understand that the Jags laid out the carpet and the wallet for Campbell. And he turned in, a season that was worth the Defensive Player of the Year. I think he might have finished second that year. He was fantastic. But it was a defensive-oriented team. Bortles was the quarterback, and they had a decent running game with Fournette, but the receivers were pedestrian. So it was a different type of team than the Bucs, but a very successful team. And I'm glad he said that. Steve, on your point about enthusiasm, I understand what you're trying to say, but I think Lee will back me up in terms of there seems to be a particular energy about this franchise this offseason. And it's extended into training camp. And I think it's very particular about this Buck team. And, of course, Brady's a big part of it. They got a lot to prove and big expectations. And I know, you know, Cincinnati's excited about Joe Burrow and the Steelers want to bounce back and Atlanta thinks they can compete in the NFC South. But the enthusiasm level here at One Buck Place, it's tough to match across the league, I think.
Like I said, I don't ever recall Bucks being this excitable in practice, in training camp. Like I said, I keep going back to the word enthusiasm. Again, it reminds me of college guys getting together on a Sunday afternoon and having football. I mean, it's or high school kids playing football.
He gives them a real reason to believe, number 12 does.
Yeah.
It's very unique. They've never had that around here, and let's see if they can handle it.
Yeah, it's exciting as hell, and, you know, I am just so eager for this team, Ira. You know, the Buccaneers are one of only three teams right now riding a losing streak, a consecutive losing season streak of 3 years in a row. Only one of three teams in the NFC. You got the Redskins. We know how well they're managed. We got the Giants. And we got the Buccaneers. You know, that's how bad it is. Sometimes people don't think it's that bad. It's been that bad. And, you know, nobody in our division, not even the Lions, but that's what we're looking at. We got to break that. We got to break the seven-year streak of not going 3-5 or worse in the first half. That may be an all-timer, Ira. You may have to go into your record books there. I don't know if anyone's done that in the modern era, been that bad.
And you know what's part of that, Steve, is after they flop in the first half, and more times than not, Lee, knock themselves out of a viable playoff race by November. And Lee, more times than not, they finish decently and provide all this hope for the following season, and it never pans out, Lee. Never pans out.
Yeah. Steve had such a great one-liner. I got a comment on this. All this you're hearing coming out of the Washington Post, Snyder. Now, I'm no Snyder fan, you know. He knows how to make money, but he's a clown when it comes to football. But this whole episode, especially recently, the reports this week, doesn't it sort of have the scent that someone in the NFL, I mean, Goodell, is leaking information to build a case to run Snyder out of the league
like he did
Jerry Richardson?
Yes, it does. Yes,
it really does smell like that to me.
And I'm no fan of Snyder. I'm no fan of him.
It just smells like you know, someone's trying to leak info to the Washington Post so they'll blow it up and build a case and make it really easy for Goodell to say, Dan, you're out.
Fair enough. Steve, you know, I think it's remains to be seen, Steve, whether Snyder's fellow owners have turned on him or will turn on him. But I think what's clear is from the league office, Steve, the Park Avenue office, they want Snyder out. It's a black eye for the league.
You want me to tell you a funny Danny Snyder story?
You got a Dan Snyder story,
yeah,
Steven?
Believe it or not, I do, Ira. It's stupid, but it's funny. You'll appreciate it.
Is there a cheerleader involved?
No women. No women whatsoever, right. Unfortunately. No women involved. But this was at the owners' meetings. I might have been, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago in Arizona. And
wait a minute. I was there. That was the year that you were driving like AJ Foyt down the streets of Phoenix.
I don't know. The years, I'm a little mixed up on the years, but not the point. Jay Gruden was the coach, and Gruden missed his breakfast time as far as the meeting with the media. Who knows what he was doing? Not important. But to make up for it, the next day, Gruden did a breakfast on his own, and Dan Snyder purchased breakfast for the media who was going to attend. And it was like a makeup meeting with Jay Gruden.
And they did it in the restaurant, the hotel restaurant?
No, they did it in the little ballroom area next to the media room. Anyway, so I happened to be up really early. I'm an early riser anyway. I was down there. I'm like, oh, what's going on? And I really didn't know what Dan Snyder looked like. And I went into the room there, and this guy tells me, the Redskins have purchased breakfast, Jay Gruden, blah, blah, blah. You know, enjoy, you know, eat. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. I have nothing to say to Jay Gruden, but I'm going to help myself. And the guy I said that to was Dan Snyder. I didn't realize that he was the one saying, have breakfast.
What was his reaction when you said that?
I don't know. It didn't. I just thought he was just some guy. I was like, hey, great. And I just went to grab the food. I don't even know what his reaction was.
I can just see, Lee, I can just see Steve munching on a prune Danish. I can just see it.
And Steve, by the way, your AJ Foyt reference, just for everybody under 45, he was the IndyCar driver of his day, which was what, 60s, 70s? Sort of like Kyle Busch.
He's still a famous person, though. He's famous now.
I bet you walk on the streets of AJ Foyt, you won't get too much of a response from anybody under 40.
Ira, I got some news.
Steve, did you stay for the breakfast or you left? What'd you do?
I was standing there, shoving a plate of food into my mouth, and I was listening to Jay Gruden. You know how you stand a few steps off the table, and there was nobody else there, so it was kind of quiet, or quieter than usual. And then somebody else was standing next to me, and I just started talking a little bit. And I learned in about 5 minutes later that Danny Snyder was that guy. So I ate and I left. All right, a little bit of news, Ira, but first I want to remind everybody the podcast is available at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts. You can subscribe, get a free alert so you know when there's a new episode, or just, of course, keep track on joebucksfan.com, on Twitter. You can follow Joe Bucksfan or iKaufman76. And we thank Bill Curry Ford, who we talked about in the opening there, the great offers that are coming. Remember, BillCurryFord.com is where you want to start shopping immediately at all times when you're looking for any kind of vehicle. End of the month is here. Fantastic offers. Reach out to Sean Sullivan by email or phone or right at the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Sage, are you with me for this news?
I absolutely am.
Arians let it slip that the maximum decibel level in the Superdome is going to be 85 decibels that they'll be able to crank up the crowd noise to.
That's right.
Now, that sounds awfully loud, and it is loud, but a typical crowd in the Superdome, Ira, looked it up, typical crowd, third down at Superdome, it's about 110, 112 decibels. They've gotten it up to 120 before. But 85 is nothing, which means this is a big advantage for the Buccaneers.
Steve, you were on the call the other day when I asked Arians. I said, look, given the lack of a uniform league policy, which I'm a little surprised at, and Lee, your boy Mike Florio is all over this. He thinks it's a complete competitive advantage for teams that are allowing fans in, even at reduced capacity, and doesn't understand why the league is not issuing some kind of a blanket policy. But I asked Arians if he was okay with it. And of course he is, Lee, because we fully anticipate that the Bucks will have fans at Raymond James Stadium. Maybe Arians would think differently if there was going to be zero people coming into Ray J, but I don't believe that's going to be the case, especially since the other two Florida teams are allowing fans in at a certain percentage. So we shall see what happens, but I would much rather let the Saints pipe in noisily than we've been in that building many times, Mr. DeKemper. It's a terrible press box. It's an old facility. But, man, is it loud when those Saints fans get going, Lee.
You know, me personally, I would love to watch an NFL game in an empty stadium with no fake noise. But I know the chances of that happening are virtually nil. There's no way in it. Because I want to hear the interaction with the players. I want to hear the coaches hollering plays in or somebody cussing out another player for screwing up. I would love to hear that. I mean, we get to hear a little bit of that at training camp, a little bit. I mean, it was fun the other day when Arians went bananas on the offense. It was pure Bobby Knight. I'm not losing to Purdue another effing time. And that it was great, but
Steve, there's been times in the last decade when I think DeKemper was able to make out some noise because at the end of some of these games during some of these 5-11 seasons, there weren't many people in fannies in those seats at Ray J.
Oh, how about the Broncos game?
Never forget it. Never forget it, Lee.
There was only like 4,000 people left, and 3,500 of them were Broncos fans.
And they all came down to the front rows. They came down. And it was pouring out, Lee. Pouring.
Yeah.
You know, when this all started in the modern era, Ira, and I say that in the post-Glory Days era, for me. This all started in January 2008 when the Buccaneers, their last playoff game, and that game was just a sea of blue beyond what anybody could have possibly imagined.
That's a great point, Steve. And who can forget that the Bucs led those Giants 7-0? Nobody knew how good the Giants were. They were a wild card team. And Ernest Graham, I'll never forget it. Ernest Graham ran wild in the first quarter. I think he had 50 yards. Bucs were winning 7-0. And then, in his inimitable style, Gruden started throwing the ball all over the joint. Michael Strahan pressuring Garcia. And it was a disaster the rest of the way.
And it was more than a generation ago. Sage, we are going to head out on this podcast. Anybody who hasn't listened to episode one of this week, go check it out. It's about an hour and 15 minutes. A lot of good nuggets, a lot of Sage wisdom in there. And Sage, we'll probably be back early next week as we get really to the home stretch toward the season, maybe a Monday podcast, and then we'll probably have some predictions in episode two of next week as the season will be right here. And of course, all the fans want to know what you pick for the across the NFL so they can bet the opposite.
And, you know, speaking of predictions, and I love this because it happens every year, you know, and I'm not, you know, picking on Sports Illustrated, but entities like SI and CBS Sports and even Pro Football Talk, they all do their predictions for every team. And what I like to do on occasion is add up the numbers. Guys, on more than one occasion, the numbers don't add up. Lee, that's a word to the wise. If anybody out there is going to try to pick records for all 32 teams, at the end of the day, add them all up, and the wins have to equal the losses. That's just the way it is.
Now, here's one for you, Ira. It's sort of related to your podcast. Was Cosmo being used as a model for Bill Curry?
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind if Sean Sullivan wants to use Cosmo. Was he used? I don't know that. I don't know
that. The reason why I'm asking, now, they're using a picture of a Boston, what you call your dog?
Boston Terrier.
A picture of a Boston Terrier in a Bucks chair right next to a F-150. And they're using it on social media as advertisement.
Now wait a minute, Steve. If that's Cosmos' mug up there, doesn't he need to get a residual check over there? Right?
Yeah, he's a little...
Not unless you sign his rights away. When you sign the paperwork for that rig of yours you got from Bill Curry, you sign one too many papers?
Ira, this dog is a little bit darker than Cosmo. It looks a little tougher, a little meaner, but you'll have to check it out. Also, going forward, later this season... As I said a long time ago, we're going to have Cosmo Day at Big Storm because the open patio where you'll be watching all road games with fans, it's going to be dog friendly. So we're going to have a Cosmo Day.
That's got to happen.
And people can take selfies with Cosmo. They don't have to social distance from Cosmos. They can love him up. You know, it'll be a lot of fun time. Get the heck out of here. Give us a piece of wisdom. And then I'm hitting the done button.
All right. Look. 2 weeks from the NFL season kicks off. And unfortunately, Lee, after Sunday, when Mr. DeKemper goes out to practice, it's going to be stretching for a half an hour, and he's not really going to be able to see any action. So we're not going to be able to get the real dope in terms of the practices over the next couple of weeks. But I don't have any doubt that the Bucs are going to be ready. And Lee, what I'm about to say is going to incur the wrath of some Buck fans, but it is what it is, and the truth will prevail, Mr. DeKemper. So I'll say it right now. This has been one very smooth training camp for the Tampa Bay Bucks. No distractions, minimal injuries. And if something happens in the next 2 weeks, guys, I'm not responsible. I'm just telling the way it is right now.